Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by the second annual Catskill Cuisine Festival. Visit catskill-cuisine.com to learn more and buy tickets.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carbone. I'm the host. It's our 15th year, and we're really psyched to be out in Denver, Colorado, as part of the Bulls Old Festival. And through our good friend Emily at Radcraft Beer, we get a chance to sit with another really interesting brewery that's out here in Colorado. And so I'm feeling really fortunate to be here today. I'm with two of the owners of Brews Beers in Denver.
And I'm Charlie Gottenkenny. I am one of the co-founders of Brews Beers.
And I'm Ryan Evans, the other co-founder of Brews Beers here in Denver, Colorado.
All right. So I trust Radcraft Beer implicitly. I've met guys from West Slope, Ska Brewing, and different craft maltsters all around the country. But you guys are doing Belgian beer. And when I first started out, Belgian beer was probably what made me go from wine to drinking beer over 25 years ago. What was it? Let's talk about your journey to this brewery and why Belgian. So we'll start. You guys give us your little intros. And I know that you also teach classes about Belgian beer. So this is a good place to keep craft beer knowledge going. Okay.
Yeah. So how we came to form Brews Beers, I'll let Ryan tell his part of it. But I started home brewing in 1988 following a trip to Belgium, where I kind of fell in love with Belgian beer. And I homebrewed, I've been doing it about 35 years. But Ryan and I met, I think it was in 2014. And he and his wife were attending one of the beer classes that I was teaching. We started talking, and the more we talked, the more we thought we ought to have a Belgian brewery here in Colorado. And next thing you know, we were drawing up a business plan, and the concept of Brews was born.
You know, one of the challenges I remember from years back, when some of the established Belgian breweries would collaborate with West Coast breweries, is that the American brewer said that here in the States, there's openness to collaboration, sharing recipes. But that a lot of the older Belgian breweries really try to hold on to their secrets. So I'm wondering, how did you guys crack the mystery of Belgian beers?
Largely from, after you taste beers for a while, and I was a beer judge for many years, you start to be able to break them down. And so a lot of times you can figure out, you might start with the recipe that's published somewhere and then start playing with it. Run some test batches of it, decide something you want to brew on a larger scale, and then we go ahead and do them. And we're always tweaking the recipes. So, we taste something and we'd like to get that into one of our beers, and we start looking for the beer to do it and looking at exactly how we would change the recipe or process in order to do that.
Yeah, I think Charlie's right. We travel a lot to Belgium. We take our customers over there every year. We do one or two annual trips where we guide about 9 or 10 days. We'll take 40 or so people over to Belgium and guide them around. So we're always getting new inspiration and something to shoot for when we're over there. We go on these trips and we come back, and our desire to brew and really push the bounds, it just grows every time. So, we'll come back with 15 or 20 different styles that grabbed our hearts in some form or fashion over there. And then we'll get to work on brewing and sampling and trying to decide what our next direction is. We've got our staples, our core beer lineup that is always dependable and there. But then the other half is very much creativity and pushing the bounds and what can we do that inspired us in Belgium that we can bring here. Not everyone can afford to go to Belgium for 10 days, right? So we've got the brewery, which is great. And then we teach a class called World of Belgian Beers. So you come in for about 2 hours. We'll run you through about 15 different beer styles. You get to try them all. You get to sample them. You learn about the history and the flavor profile. And so that's kind of another step closer to Belgium. And then, of course, if you've got the time, money, and energy, we'll take you over there and guide you around. So, you know, Belgian beer, we live, eat, and breathe it. This entire group and and drink a lot of it. And this is the life we live. We've created something that we fell in love with and kind of brought it back to America. And it's kind of our duty to share it with others.
Charlie, a few anecdotes. And I know you told me a story about being in wherever you were staying, there was a Belgian beer bar right there.
Yeah. So the first time I went over to Belgium was in 1988. And I was conducting a class at the time. I was a sales consultant and was doing a class on negotiation for a bunch of executives. And so I had read an article on the plane on the way over talking about Belgian beers, and it kind of stuck with me. And I thought, I'd like to try a few of those, and got into my hotel, and there was a beer bar right in the lobby, a beautiful little brass and wood bar and stuff, and went in there and started drinking some Belgian beers. The bartender was shocked that an American would actually drink Belgian beers at the time. And never did make it to dinner that first night, but I was there several more days and had a chance to try some more beers and absolutely fell in love with them. Got back to Dallas and, you know, Belgian beers were pretty hard to find. You had to work your way through all the Miller Lite. And decided to learn to homebrew so that I could duplicate some of the beers that I really liked. And I've been homebrewing ever since then and gradually learned more about beer and developing recipes and experimenting with Belgian styles and just fell in love with the whole thing.
Well, that's great. That's a great intro. And for you, Ryan, you know, when you're on these stops in Belgium, what are some of the go-to Belgian beers that you guys are referencing?
You know, Abbey styles are always on our list, right? Going to the Trappist breweries and trying the triples and the quads. Triple is very much the beer that started the brewery. I was in backpacking Europe in college in the 90s, and I ended up headed towards Amsterdam, like every good college student at the time, to go find a good education of some sort. And I ended up on a train change in Brussels. I had 2 hours to kill, so I went to a pub and asked the guy for a beer list, and he brings literally a book to me. And I flip through this book. I don't know any of these styles. And so he comes back for my order. I said, "Oh man, what do you drink?" And he goes, "Triple." And I didn't know what a triple was at the time. I said, "Okay." And he goes, "Triple Carmelite." And I said, "Great, whatever that is, I'll take it." And that was the first real Belgian beer style I had. I fell in love with it. It changed my life. Came back home, couldn't find it anywhere. Couldn't find Belgian Abbey style beers anywhere in the late 90s. And eventually ran into Charlie, who was given a course on Belgian beer brewing. And we both decided we got to get this out to the world. It's special enough. So the first beer we ever brewed together in Charlie's backyard was a triple. And the first beer we brewed professionally for the brewery was a triple. And it's funny, but still today, a triple is my favorite style. So I'm Might always on the hunt for triples.
Yeah.
Abbey styles, but then Saisons and the sours over there are always inspiring. And seeing what they do with those and how we can push the bounds here on those with real fruit and seasonal brewing. We have a garden out behind the brewery here that we grow an ingredient or two every year to make a beer with. And it's very much how they do it in Belgium. When the fruit is ready, then we harvest it and we make the beer. And, nature kind of runs that schedule. It's not so much the brewer's schedule. It is nature's schedule. And that's how it was always done in Belgium. So we're pretty authentic in that brewing style.
Cherries come in June. The peaches come in August. And we have a lot of really good fruit growers up in the western slope of the mountains here. So we tend to use whole local fruit if we can find it, which is what you would find in Belgium as well.
And I know you also work with some craft maltsters.
Yeah, craft malt is big for us. Everything local. So we always say we're Belgian inspired, but Colorado made. And so over 90%, probably closer to 95% now of our ingredient base is Colorado based ingredients. We're very spoiled here in Colorado. We've got malt, we've got hops, we've got fruit, we've got a local yeast guy that can prop up and create any types of yeast we either bring him or he'll create it. So we're able to buy grain that's less than an hour away from us. We're buying hops on the Western Slope, so just a few hours away. And we kind of take that Belgian influence, but we use Colorado ingredients. Our thought is it's better local, represent, you know, and support local farmers just like they do in Belgium. I mean, it's all about that quality too. You know, back in the day, you would pay a pretty good premium to get local grains over, say, European grains, which is kind of mind boggling because you'd pay more to get grain an hour from here than you would half a world away. It's still that way, but the gap has narrowed. So these guys are getting better quality, more competitive. The prices are getting better, which is making our job even easier to transfer more and more of our business over to local farmers and save some of these farms. You know, we've got a farm up north, Root Shoot Malting, that is family based and owned, and they are very much on a mission to save farming and farmland for generations to come. And so the more we buy from them, the more they have in their coffers to protect that land. And so we find that to be fruitful for everyone.
Yeah. And just the freshness factor, you know, getting stuff local. One of the nice things about it is it hasn't been around for months and months and months in a warehouse.
So let's start with the story of what's in the glass. I'm drinking this beer, don't know what it is, and I'm loving it. And one thing I love about good beers is that I came in thirsty and thinking that I was going to want to drink water. But you know what? The water doesn't taste as good as this beer.
This is a fun one, Jimmy. So we put two glasses in front of you. One, these are both triples. In fact, these are both the almost exact same recipe. So the first, the lighter color one that you're drinking on now, is our Abbey Triple, available year round. A staple of ours. Again, Triple opened the brewery. It's our passion.
That's one of our biggest sellers, too.
One of our biggest sellers. And so we took this recipe and said, what can we do to really challenge ourselves on triples? We make a bunch of different triples throughout the year. So we came up with the next glass over here. It's a little darker. It's called Long Day Triple. The only difference between these beers as far as brewing is the boil time. So we do about a 90-minute boil on our standard Abbey Triple, the lighter blonde-colored one. The Long Day Triple, this one we did about a 6-hour boil. So it creates a whole different body. Hops are the same. Grain is the same. Everything's the exact same. The only thing we changed was the boil time. And you couldn't get a more different triple, right? So
yeah.
No true ingredient changes, just boil time. And this is an example of what you can do with a style without changing the recipe.
Charlie, you mentioned that you'd been a beer judge for a long time. Mm-hmm. Which programs are you? Are you certified in?
Yeah, I'm a national judge in BJCP. So most of the judging that I've done has been really for homebrewing. But that said, homebrewers, you know, have a lot of flexibility, and there's a lot of very good homebrewers out there. And so it gave me a chance to taste a lot of good beers and some that weren't so great. And, you know, the nice thing about homebrewing is you're not restricted by the economics of scale that you get into when you get a commercial brewery. So, yeah, I can put fresh fruit in it, and I don't have to buy a ton of it, you know, as opposed to us. We're usually buying a big couple pallets load of it to go into some of our beers.
So with your beer judge cap on, I'm tasting the two beers side by side. I had the Abbey Triple, and now I have the
Long
the
Day.
Second one. So tell us the difference. And I mean, I'm tasting a lot of things in my mouth the second beer.
So as Ryan mentioned, it's pretty much the same beer. We just boiled the one longer. What that did is it created some caramelization in the brew kettle, which is what gives the beer more of an amber hue to it than the other beer, which is really a kind of a deep gold. And so that caramelization creates, you know, also some caramel flavors in there. And then the long boil boils off a lot of the water, so the beer gets about 2% stronger than the regular triple. And you know, so the regular triple is 9% alcohol. This one's 11. And, you know, the difference in flavor is pretty notable. This was, again, one of the ones we were, as Ryan referenced, you know, when we're over there, we get inspired by certain things. And there's this wonderful little pub, and I think their beer is contracted for them, but it's called Dahara, spelled Dagar, if you were doing it in English. And Dahara has this wonderful strong triple that's about 11%. And we concluded after drinking many glasses of it over several nights that we wanted to try something like that and kind of figured out how to do it. And they were boiling it longer. And so we boiled this one longer, and this was the result.
I'm thrilled that you guys are so into Belgian beer. I haven't talked about Belgian beer in a long time, and it's probably what got me into craft beer instead of just any other beverage. Refresh our listeners, and some of them may not even know your top lists of Belgian breweries that you go to, that you've been to, that you drink, because it's kind of a treasure of just flavors and history. And when you talk about what's in the glass, it's nice that there's some history to it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's so many great beers over there now that you can get over here. You know, you start with like some of the lambics with Drefontaine or Cantillon. They're getting a little harder to find, but they're still there. They're still available. Obviously, Delirium is great. Duvel is one of our favorites. It's just so clear and crisp. It's a golden strong that most people know. But an alternative to that is another good one is Omer. Omer creates a fantastic beer. We've done some collaborations with them during the COVID era that was really special. Duché de Bourgogne, which is another
Flanders red. Yeah.
So we always love that. You know, we love Straff Hendrick. They're triple and they're quad, and we always take people to tour their breweries.
One of our favorite is Dadala. And they make the Ara beer, which I just think is fantastic, and a number of other great beers, including their Ora beer, which is their main one. That was their original beer. But that's a fantastic brewery. The brewer is an artist as well, so he has all these pictures on the wall of local people that, you know, of note that he's done these paintings of. And he just took us around personally. You walk in, a lot of the equipment is old. It looks like barn junk, but, you know, you realize that he's making some of the best beer in the whole country.
So, talking about barn junk, I've heard the myth or the reality, a lot of the Belgian breweries are older. There might be cobwebs and other microbes that help impact the fermentation. How do you start from scratch? You don't have a 50 or 100-year tradition. You're starting from scratch, new equipment. How did you... What did you buy? What did you start with?
Yeah, that's a great question, Jimmy. You know, we don't have the history. We're 8 years old, which is a flash in the pan compared to some of these breweries we take people to in Belgium, right? Multi-generational breweries in the same location, getting all of that funk and fun into their beers. You know, one thing we did this year that was pretty exciting is last year we got two 30 barrel wooden fooders. We got them from another brewery that had them that changed their program and didn't really have a need or a want for wood aged. We've always dreamed of having fooders, and so we jumped on it. We created one's dedicated to a Saison and one's dedicated to a Flanders style beer. We took that Flanders style beer last year and went over to Palisade, Colorado, and picked up peaches, and we aged it on those peaches, and we created a sour that we then entered into the European Beer Star, and we took gold. We took first place for sour barrel aged beer in Europe with that this year. Yep. So, we don't have the lineage that they do, but we're certainly using the same methods, and we push ourselves hard in that direction to replicate some of that. And that fooder should just get better as long as we take good care of it, and get that Saison to the next level and get it to start to, turn out some amazing beers, which it already is. Time is everything with Belgian beer. Right. Our facility is bigger. We have more tanks and more options to brew than a typical brewery would in the U.S. It's more expensive, it's more time consuming, more equipment and capital intensive. But if you can create the environment where you can create that time and give the beer it's fair due, then you can create world-class special beers like we did with that sour.
So let's talk about Denver. I stayed in Lohi this week. Our Bolozol event was in the Arts District, Santa Fe Drive. Where are we?
Yeah, so we're in northwest Denver. We're about 10, 12 minutes from downtown Denver, just northwest. This is our main brewery and tasting room. We have a second tasting room down in the Capitol Hill area, so not too far from the state capitol. So that's kind of our city vibe, our downtown vibe. But yeah, this is northwest Denver, almost not Denver at this point. We're in a new neighborhood. It's really unique building. And what attracted Charlie and I to this location was the fact that we're surrounded 100% by residential neighborhood. So this was a chance for us to bring a very European feel to a brewery. You know, in America, 80s, 90s, you're locating breweries in warehouses, and you were in the back of the warehouse. And then we became cooler in the 90s, 2000s. They'd move you to the front of the warehouse, but you're still in a warehouse district surrounded by semi-trucks and no real culture. This was an opportunity to build a brewery from the ground up in a neighborhood and become a center point of that neighborhood. And we've done very well at that. We enjoy the community part of it, and it's very, very Belgian to be like this. So we're one of the few breweries that has been able to pull off a scale this size inside of a neighborhood.
Yeah, and it's really worked well for us to have a theme. So we do pretty much exclusively Belgian and Belgian-inspired beers, and that's part of the Belgian culture. You know, if you look at their brewers, they get inspired to do something. They don't try to necessarily pigeonhole it into, oh, this is a triple or this is a, you know, quadruple. Some of them don't just make what they think is the best beer that they could possibly make. And they're very focused on that. And, you know, they don't care whether it falls into a category. Here in the U.S., we enter a lot of competitions and we're more concerned with different categories of beer. It's a lot more loose over there. And that's really where a lot of the most interesting stuff comes from, are these small breweries that are experimenting around. They get inspired by something. They don't necessarily want to produce the same thing that's being cranked out at InBev or whatever. So they'll go off and experiment on their own and create something unique. And that's something we've tried to do as well.
Well, talking about Belgian-style beers in Colorado, little backstory. Were there Belgian beer bars in Denver? Is there a history of people drinking Belgian-style beers out here?
Yeah, you know, the one that hooked me, and it was the only one in existence in this area, was a place called the Cheeky Monk. The Cheeky Monk was located down on Colfax, ironically just a few blocks away from where our second tasting room is now, our Brews Off Fax tasting room. But Cheeky Monk very much was a Belgian beer bar serving frites and all the styles on tap, right? And it was such a special thing. Ahead of his time, trying to sell, you know, $8, $9, $10 beers on Colfax in the 90s and 2000s was a tough game. So he eventually closed shop, which was kind of crushing for us. There was another beer bar up in Boulder that was very much Belgian focused, but they were few and far between. They were hard to find. They were expensive. And, you know, if they were done right, we would frequent them. But to get the volume they needed was tough.
Charlie, for beer bar history, it seems like that the first wave of craft beer in some of the big cities around the country were Belgian beer bars.
Yeah. I mean, you really look, not just bars, but also some of the early breweries. If you look at the breweries like Russian River, Allagash, Omegang, the Lost Abbey, these were all some very well-known Boulevard in Kansas City. These were some of the earliest brewers in the American craft movement, but a lot of them, about half of them actually, were Belgian-style beers. And, you know, they've been, over the years, as Ryan mentioned, they're a little more expensive, but they're also, in my opinion, a lot classier beers than just going out and getting your run-of-the-mill hazy IPA. Nothing against IPAs or anything. Actually, we have one that's a Belgian-style IPA. But, you know, a lot of people like to get variety, and when they come here and look up at our menu, they're blown away. And to me, the biggest compliment is when they taste every beer on the menu and they say they liked all of them. So that, to me, is you know, we're doing the right thing if we're getting that kind of response on it.
And I can't wait to keep drinking all the beers here. This is fun. This is perfect. I'm flying out of Denver this afternoon. I'm going to sleep well. So I don't actually beer gives me energy. So the next beer, Ryan.
Yeah, this is a unique one. So we have an all-female brewed beer here. It's called the She Devil. The women of Brews created it and brewed it. And
International Women's Day.
Yep, we released it on International Women's Day. So this is a golden strong, a traditional golden strong that they added ginger to, as well as blood orange. So it's a blood orange ginger golden strong. It's all real. You know, we hand ground up the ginger and put it in there in the blood orange. And it's just a very unique take on a golden strong. Normally people, golden strong, they'll think of a Duvel, which is just pure. This is taking Duvel to a whole different direction. And it's been out a week now and it's extremely popular.
First I'll talk about the nose, but my experience with Belgian breweries keeping their secrets versus American breweries being more open, it must have been 12 years ago. I was friendly with the Green Flash Brewing and they had a collaboration going on with St. Fulian, one of the longtime Belgian breweries. And when St. Fulian came out to California, they found wild fennel on the side of the road and they brewed it. And the nose on this beer right now reminds me of that. It's almost like somehow there's a wild fennel quality coming out.
Yeah. So you get that ginger in there and you get some of the color, which is on radio, kind of a mid-amber. You know, a lot of that came from the blood orange and also from the recipe of Golden Strong that they used. And we kind of supervised, but they ran the brew. And this was entirely their creation in terms of its concept and all. So it's fun. We do that every year. And, you know, we feel it's a great thing to release during International Women's Month.
Yeah, and I'm looking on our wall here. We have a wall of fame behind you, Jimmy, that's all stuff that we hand carry back from our Belgian tours, right? And we'll try to get you a picture of that so your viewers can see it. But there's one on the wall there called Deliria. And Deliria is Delirium's version of an all-female brew that they release every year. And so,
got a pink label.
It's brewed by women, enjoyed by everybody is their motto. But again, it's, you know, they're doing a lot of the same things over there that we are over here.
Wow. I'm just enjoying all the beers and hanging out with you guys. Some of the questions I have aren't even worth asking because you guys have told me so many things. I will say this. I have a friend named Horst Dornbusch, who's a German consultant for beer. And he wrote a lot of books, many of them in German. And it was about 12 years ago. And he was always working with new breweries. And he said, if anyone I'm advising at this point, this was 12 years ago, if they're opening a new brewery then, he said, you have to specialize. And when he said it, it sounded far out because he said you have to either do English-style beers, German-style beers, or Belgian-style. So I guess, obviously, you've been welcome for your Belgian-style beers. I don't know. Just let's talk about that because it's very interesting. There's so many breweries where people have such a range of styles, and often I feel like they don't have one thing they're doing really well.
Yeah, we decided early on that we wanted to specialize, and of course our passion was Belgian beer. We love them, and you know, one of the challenges with Belgian beer is because it's not one of the biggest imports in the U.S., a lot of people don't know much about it. Ryan mentioned when he first looked at the book of a beer list, there was a lot of stuff on there he had no idea what it was. And so one of the reasons that we do the courses that we do on Belgian beer, and we have a course on, you know, the broad range of Belgian beers, and we have another course coming up next Saturday on just sour beers, and not just Belgian sours, but also German sours and U.S. sours. And so we feel part of our mission is to educate people, and it's kind of in our enlightened self-interest, because the more they learn about Belgian beer, the more they're likely to come back and buy it. And a lot of people tell us, you know, we like your beers better than the ones we had in you know, from the store that are from Belgium. And I said, well, you really need to go over to Belgium and taste them because While I appreciate the compliment, and I think we do a good job with all of this, you don't really experience Belgian beer until you're there, because it's nice and fresh and available, you know, widely in pretty much the gazillion pubs they have over there that serve up a variety of beers.
This has been a great intro, guys. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio.
Gather your friends and family at the second annual Catskill Cuisine Festival, presented by the Sullivan Catskills Visitors Association, Bethel Woods Center for the Arts, and Resorts World Catskills. Mark your calendars for a flavor-packed weekend from May 10th to May 12th. Experience the fusion of phenomenal food and electrifying entertainment. Rub shoulders with your favorite Food Network personalities, including Andrew Zimmern, Michael Simon, Scott Conant, Marcus Samuelson, Jeffrey Zakarian, Anne Burrell, Melba Wilson, and distinguished international chefs by LaBelle Farms. Kick off the festivities with Friday's star-studded golf tournament and evening reception. Saturday heats up with free tastings, thrilling live demos, music, and family activities, culminating with a gourmet dinner hosted by celebrity chefs. And on Sunday, celebrate Mother's Day with a special celebrity-curated brunch. Tickets for this celebration are selling like hotcakes. Visit Catskill-Cuisine.com to grab your pass for this unforgettable weekend in the picturesque Catskills. See you there.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. It's our 15th year on Beer Sessions Radio. And congratulations, Heritage Radio Network is turning 15. Support us at heritageradionetwork.org. So I'm with Charlie and Ryan at Brews Beer, and this is the revelation of my trip to Denver. I am sitting drinking amazing Belgian-style beers in Denver with two very unique people. And Charlie here is my new voice of beer. Thanks for coming on, Charlie.
Glad to.
So you're teaching masterclass. I love everything about this. You're dedicated to Belgian beers. You guys take people on tours to Belgium. You guys first got to know each other because Charlie was homebrewing Belgian style beers. Let's talk me through what the classes are, the format, and maybe one example of a recent class you did, just so our listeners can get their interest piqued.
Yeah, well, our main class is the world of Belgian beers, and we go through, there's about 18 unique styles of Belgian beer that, you know, the singles, doubles, triples, quadruples, sours, all of these types of things. There are about 18 major styles, but you know, the vast bulk of the beers produced in Belgium don't really fall cleanly into one of those style guidelines. So anyway, we walk people, you know, get them familiar with the 18 major styles, and we'll talk about the history of it.
Wait, 18 major styles?
Yes. Yes.
We're not just talking double, triple, and quad.
Yeah, well, double, triple, quad, golden strong, you know, amber ales, wit beers, sour beers. I mean, there's just a lot of them there. So what we do in the classes is we get people familiar with, you know, what the beer is, what its characteristics are, where it came from, you know, how many hundred years have they brewed it, and or is it something they started making last year? In Belgium, you know, creativity is highly valued. So you get a large diversity of beer, and Belgium has the largest diversity of beer on the planet. And so we try to not only duplicate those 18 styles, but I would say about half of our, 40% of our beers are unique to us. They're beers that we have, you know, in the Belgian tradition conjured up. And so the class, you know, you go through and you taste the beers, and a lot of people come out and say, wow, I really like this one, I really like that one, and I didn't used to like Belgian beer. So that's really part of our goal, is to get people kind of hooked on them.
You know, I love when people are passionate and what's in the glass is actually making me a fan. Charlie had mentioned that the first wave of craft beer, not only were there breweries that around the country that were making Belgian style beers, but it seemed like in many of the key cities, there were beer bars that focus on Belgian beer. I know from New York City, there was the Burp Castle, which was one of the first craft beer bars in my neighborhood in the 80s. That's they only focus on Belgian beers, and that's probably how I got turned on to Chimay Triple and some other triples in the 90s. So this has been a great primer on Belgian, and I think for our listeners too, when I drink a beer, you know, we've got are IPAs and lagers, and for many of you, you've had a lot of styles. Our friend John Hall at All About Beer loves to talk about rock beer. But when you really want to drink beer and not just get a refresher, not just get a buzz, there's something about Belgian beers. And I feel like we're just touching the tip of the iceberg here, guys. So, Ryan, why should our listeners think more about Belgian beer than they have the last 10 years?
You know, I think Belgian beer is a journey. It's an experience more than anything. Like you said, there's a lot of options out there, right, to sit around and drink beer, especially in America. But I feel like a lot of these Belgian styles are more of a journey. You know, we've got a quadruple hitting the table right now. Thanks, Kristen. And, well, you know, this is a perfect example. When I drink a quadruple, I like to get it in my hand. I like to warm the glass. It's nice and cool right now, but it'll warm up and it'll open up. And so this beer is going to change from my first sip to my last sip. And I call it going on a journey together. And so I'll drink this quad, and as it warms up and opens up and I start to get more stone fruits and more licorice and more malt. And by the time I take that last sip, I've gone on a journey together, and then I'll go and fill it up and go on another journey together. That's hard to do with an unbalanced beer. You need good balance, and you need good time to let a beer like this finish off. But it's much more of an experience. You know, I look at beer brings people together, and I think the quality of Belgian beer just creates that environment where you can sit back, have great conversations with people, and really kind of bond over it.
You know, you think about people wanting to have light beers. Years ago, for me also, at my beer bar, Jimmy's Number 43, on a Friday night at some point, I couldn't just drink any more liquid. And I would love to end up with like a St. Bernard's quad, and that would be my Friday night beer. And when we're talking about other drink choices, you know, your typical red wine in international style is 12 or 13%. When people are drinking their vodka or their tequilas or their mezcals, they're starting with at least a 40% base. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to admit that at some point, you know, light lagers are great, but you really do want that beer with 8 to 10, even 12%, because it does something different to you. At some point, you don't want to drink a gallon of beer. You want to have one or two really good ones. That there is, I can say this on the air, there's something about a good buzz, and it is part of our civilization. Charlie's going to tell me about beer and civilization.
Beer and civilization. I just finished writing a book on Belgian beer. It's not published yet, but I got deeply into the history of a lot of these beers, and they go back hundreds of years, sometimes even over 800 or 900 years. Some of these monasteries have been around, and if you go back to the Middle Ages, water was not safe to drink. They didn't really understand microorganisms, so you'd see a creek and they'd have an outhouse at one end, and then just downstream from that kids would be swimming, and downstream from that they're washing laundry, and downstream from that they're getting cooking water. And water would make you sick back in those days. What you needed was something that was either boiled or alcoholic, so that, you know, it wasn't toxic. And so that was really how monasteries got into making beer. They were making
for the health of their community.
For the health of their community, right?
And let's toast to that one.
Yeah. But a lot of times they would have several strengths of beer. They would have the full strength beer, which might be a triple or a quadruple. But then they would do a second runnings of that, and that was mostly what the monks drank. That was kind of their everyday beer, more of a table beer. And they make a third runnings beer that would be donated to the poor, so that everybody would have some safe method of hydration. I'm sure back in the Middle Ages, a lot of people were running around with a pretty good buzz on most of the day, because that was their hydration. But, you know, saisons came from low-alcohol beers that the farmers would brew on premise to give to their harvesting workers. They would hire the workers to come by and do the harvest, just like we do here. And part of their deal was room, board, and up to 10 liters of beer a day. And so the farmer that made the better beer got the better workers.
Well, talking about working in the field and electrolytes, last year was my first time in Denver, and the elevation affected me in a different way, but I got pointers. People said to get this liquid IV, and I've been taking that, a powder, and drinking in my water, but I almost feel like I could just be drinking beer as well.
A good strong beer is always
that's how we can pass the altitude.
Yeah, we love it. You know, we love the camaraderie of it and just getting people around. And again, it's not a quantity, it's a quality over quantity thing, right? I had a guy come in and said, Ryan, why don't you guys make a light beer? And I said, well, what do you mean by light? You know, are you talking about the color of the beer? Are you talking about... He was very much talking about the calorie, right? He's been sold on light beer, and that's somehow healthier for him. And
I said, ultralight beer.
An ultralight. And I said, well, we have a light beer. And he goes, you do? And I go, yeah, it's this triple. Why don't you sit down? Let me show you. And so we sat down, and we drank a triple. And he was very happy at the end, and we had a great conversation. And he goes, but I don't understand how this is a light beer. And I said, well, because you just drank one of these, and you would have had to have drank five of that crap that you had at home that you call light beer. I said, you only need one, maybe two of these, and you're in a good place. And you've had a great conversation. You got a good buzz on, and life is good. So my light beer is quality over quantity, and I'd rather drink that than a light beer anyway.
And give up the Doritos and drink the good beer.
Yeah. Right, exactly. And, you know, if you look at Belgian beer in general, they are, I think they're a classier beer. They go wonderfully with food. And, you know, a lot of people drink wine with dinner. Once you've had beer with dinner, you probably won't go back. I mean, every Thanksgiving, triple is the beverage at the table rather than wine. And I love wine, but, you know, I love beer even more. And
I'm glad I brought up the alcohol strength, because when you can't compare a lager to wine at the table. It's a completely different experience. But when you're talking about these Belgian stronger beers, they there's the mouthfeel and there's other things. What is it about this strength and style of beer that works at the table?
Well, a lot of it is it harmonizes with food. So that's the best thing that helps it at the table. But, you know, the stronger beer gives you more alcohol, like a wine would be anywhere from 11 to 13%. You know, when we start getting beers up into that range, what you get is a complexity of flavor that you just don't get in some of the lighter beers. So as you take this quadruple that we're drinking and roll it across your tongue, you know, you kind of get these waves of different flavors. There's fruit flavors, there's wood flavors, there's vanilla coming out of there. There's all sorts of things that, you know, create complexity in beer. And, you know, a lot of brewers have gone over to barrel aging some of their beers and stuff. And when you taste those, you realize that they're getting more complexity out of the style than you would normally find in, you know, in a beer of that type. So that's the thing. They're fantastic food beers. They're sophisticated enough to have with fine dining. And if you go over to Belgium, the fine dining restaurants, they cook with beer. They serve the beer with the dish. And all, and you—it's not that you don't see wine over there, but it's kind of a minor player compared to, you know, the real feature of Belgium, which is the beer.
Ryan, the food program here—I've got an open can of fine smoked trout here. Last night I was at a cool Japanese record bar in Denver called ESP, and I was so thrilled to get a can of smoked trout and some baguettes and butter for the bread.
Yeah, we push it, you know, here. This is thoughtfully collected, American-sourced tinned fish, and it's a new program that we've started here that's been a successful thing. Again, it's top shelf. It's quality over quantity, and people are connecting with that. And then so you enjoy that fish with like this quad. This quad goes perfectly with that smoked fish you have there. And that experience together is valuable. You know, the other side of the Belgian beer world is the aging capability of it, right? You don't age a lager. It's not going to hold up over multiple years. But
even
you can
six
age,
months, you know,
it's, yeah, even 6 months. But some of these stronger beers that we have are good for 10 to 20 years in your cellar. And so those start to take on different characteristics and become even better pairings with food. And so, you know, much like wine, right? Our beers are live, they're unfiltered, they have the yeast in them, and they change and age very well. We're passionate about that side. We teach people how to age beers at their house, and we guide them on what to buy. And then they can always come back and get a fresh version of it and drink a three-year-old version of that same quad and see what they like. You know, you start to figure out, I'm more of like an 18-month aged quad guy. Well, that's great now that you know, and you just kind of keep that running at your house. And you know, that's hard to do with light beers. You certainly don't want to age those. Those are dying beers that are getting worse by the day, where ours tend to get
a little better. IPA is best on its first day of release, and 6 months later, you may as well toss it.
One Belgian beer that's done a good job of marketing and working with beer bars is Orval. And I know that recently the Orval Day, the annual day, just passed. I've done a couple shows and been at a couple tastings where people have had up to 5-year-old Orval, and we tasted different vintages. And it is amazing that it holds up, but it's also the fresh Orval has more of a hop forwardness. Asian beers.
Yeah, we do a lot with Orval. We go over there a lot and take our customers there, and it's really kind of a neat experience because when we take them to the restaurant after the tour, we'll go through the brew house and the packaging and all this neat area of Orval. But then we go to this restaurant afterwards that offers fresh and aged Orvals, and they offer cold and room temperature Orvals. So you can order that array and start to find out where your thing is. The other thing we get to do there is drink Orval Vert, Orval Green. Green is only available to the monks and in that one cafe outside the wall at Orval.
Literally, that's the only place in the world where you can get it. It's only on draft. Yep. They actually have an Orval with a green logo on it instead of the blue. And, of course, I've got a few of those glasses sitting up on the shelf, but it's fantastic. You can age an Orval probably over 20 years if you want to. I remember one time I was in Belgium, and I'd gone by these people's – it was a consulting group that I worked with. We went by the owner's house, and he says, would you like some older beer? And I said, absolutely. And he pulls out a bottle of 25-year-old Westvleteren 12, and – it was unbelievable. It had aged like wine does, and it takes on different characteristics over time, but it was still a vibrant beer that long. And then I also bought a bottle of La Folie from New Belgium Brewery, one of the first sours that widely was distributed in the U.S. I bought one in 1994, and last year I opened it up. It was still as great. It was even greater than it was when I'd had it younger. So they will age.
So since we're going deep into Belgium, Abbey versus Trappist.
Yeah, so one is so similar beers, obviously, but it's who's overseeing the brewing operation, right? So to be a Trappist brewery, which is a dying breed right now, we lost two more last year. We lost three last year. It has to be overseen by the monks. So the production has to be overseen by the monks. And then the money, the monetary side of it has to go towards the...
You mean they need more women to be priests?
Yeah, exactly. Nobody's signing up for this only male, no talking, dedicated. You know, it's a tough business. So,
and how do you not talk when you're drinking beer?
I know that. We don't understand it. That's the opposite.
Well, I'm sure they talk more than they let on to the public. But yeah, especially after five or six of them. But, people debate the relative merits of different beers. So you mentioned Orval. Orval, everybody in that region pretty much only drinks Orval, something like 85% of the people. And they'll have debates in the pub over whether the one in April is better than the one in October. And well, that wasn't as good as the one in March 2 years ago. And you know, the bars will carry various vintages of Orval. It's actually right on the label if you want to know when it was produced and when they think it's goodbye. And usually they'll put 5 to 10 years out, goodbye, but they'll last 20, 25 years in a cellar. So it's just real interesting. They can take the same beer. Orval only makes one beer in the whole brewery, and other than the green, which is kind of a second runnings of the main beer, they only make one beer, and yet, you know, by the aging process, there's a lot of differences between the different vintages, if you will. And so, people appreciate it, and a lot of them have their own beer cellars. In Belgium, you see that. Not so much everywhere else, you know, where beer is meant to be drunk fairly young.
Well, and Charlie brings up a good point. I mean, you couldn't get more opposite Belgium versus a European brewery in the fact that, you know, American breweries are trying to create something different every week and trying to keep up with trends and trying to chase what they think is going to be the next hot, you know, donut or cereal beer or glitter beer or whatever it is, gimmicky stuff sometimes. These breweries in Belgium produce one, maybe two different beers. They've done it for 200, 300, 400 years. They still create, you know, Orval is that perfect example. They create that one beer. That's it. They create one beer. They've been doing it for a long, long time. They own it, and they're growing again. We were there last year. They just had put in some new touches to their bottling line. They're ready to double in size again.
By the way, they have the only, you know, there's a lot of lay people, not just monks. They work at the breweries. It's under the supervision of monks, but they're one of the major breweries in the country that has a woman as their head brewer. So, and she actually gave us the tour when we went over last time. So, you know, it's interesting how Belgium wants to progress, but they don't want to lose the tradition. So you'll see very modern breweries at Chimay and Orval and even Vestvleteren, St. Bernardus. But, you know, they're really using traditional methods. Sometimes they're the ones that kind of keep a tight rein on their recipes. And it's hard to get the exact ones. You have to, you know, you kind of decide what's close and how you can slowly get there. But a lot of times it may take you years to kind of break the code on that.
Can you imagine a brewery in the United States just creating one beer and surviving?
Budweiser?
Yeah, well.
Actually, it is one beer that they water down to various strengths. But
So what's in the glass? This quad. I love it. A few brewer notes.
Yeah, so this is our Abbey Quad. It's available year-round. It's just a good go-to beer of mine, especially in the winter. This is what I call my shovel beer when I go out and shovel the snow, and I want this in a fireplace as my reward. Yeah. Very malty.
So it's a good by-the-fire beer.
Yeah.
It's a good Friday night beer, too.
You were mentioning what's the difference between Trappist and Abbey. Trappist is a religious order. So there are only 11 Trappist breweries in the whole world, and about six of them are in Belgium. And, you know, it's, as Ryan mentioned, they've got a problem coming up because the monks are getting older and stuff, and they need to replace them, and not everybody wants to. A guy in their 20s doesn't necessarily want to go into the monastic lifestyle. But anyway, back to the point of Abbey. When the Trappists came out and invented these styles, a lot of breweries started copying them. And they started calling them Trappist beers. And the Trappists were like, whoa, this is our trademark. This is our, so they made some rules around what it requires to be Trappist. And they got the government to ratify that. So you can't add an abbey, even though it's a religious order, maybe, you know, something other than the Cistercians. You can't just call something Trappist anymore. So they developed what were called abbey beers, the beers that were associated typically with a monastery of some sort, but oftentimes they were brewed by an independent brewer. So I say the big difference is Trappist brewed by monks, abbey beers brewed by dudes, but that's not a slight on the abbey beers. They are oftentimes just as good, if not better, than some of their Trappist cousins. But for reasons of maintaining the Trappist brand, Trappist has some very specific requirements. Abbey's not so much.
So, Ryan, how does this location here of Brews Beers fit into the community? You have classes. You've got beer on draft. What's your on draft versus packaging? A little overview of this location and your brewery business.
Yeah, that's fair. You know, we never set out to be a packaging brewery. In fact, we were pretty much against it. We didn't want any cans. We didn't want anything but draft. Main reason being the conversation and the experience that we have over a can going out in a liquor store, right?
So we have like six beers now, and they're taking them away and bringing them out.
A lot of clinking.
Kristen just brought us a new one here, a Belgian wit style beer. Obviously, the wit style, Pierre Celis, and kind of saved that over it.
Rob Todd and Allagash, now everyone thinks of, yeah, he invented it.
Well, yeah, I remember reading an article about Rob and talking about having to go out and try to sell this cloudy, light-colored beer to, you know, people that were used to drinking Miller Lite and Bud Light and that sort of thing. Said it was a long road to hoe to get them to even try it. And, you know, now it's become one of the top. I think it's the best white beer in the world is the Allagash. But, yeah.
I'll tell you a secret about Allagash. 12, 15 years ago, basically Rob Todd said, if you're selling Allagash White, I'm coming to your place. And he even had it in places like, you know, as craft beer was coming in, you'd find a pool hall or a regular bar. That was the neat, for me, that was the neat phase. We could go to, or especially on the East Coast, a regular place like a pool hall that had a bar, that their beer of choice would be Allagash White. And it was quite amazing. They said, if you want Rob Todd to come to your place, you have to have Allagash White.
He probably wouldn't come here since we brew our own. Our white beer, which you're drinking now, is called Dame Blanche, which means white lady. And an interesting little twist on that is in Belgian and French folklore, white ladies are apparitions that you run into in the forest. So as you're stumbling back from the pub, which I suspect contributed a lot to the legend, you would see the white lady, the apparition on the trail, and if you would dance with her, she would let you go and give you a coin. And if you didn't dance with her, she'd throw you in the brambles or throw you in the creek. So the locals feared the white ladies because they were ghosts and stuff. And but yeah,
and that was the some of the guys' excuse for why they came home and they'd fallen into the creek.
Yeah, exactly. When they had to explain to their wife why they fell into the creek is because the white lady got me.
Yeah, they'd say, oh, there was a lady, she wanted me to dance with her. Of course, I said no, and I ended up in the creek. Right?
That's pretty much it.
This is what I want. I wanted lore. I love the history. I love the myth of beer. It's the same as wine. One thing that wine has is there's so many stories. You go to a raw wine fest, and there's natural wine, and you meet a couple that's like, we're just going back to the way our grandparents made wine. And they're talking about they're in the Mount Etna,
yeah.
has a volcano,
yeah.
And these people in Sicily, their winery has forever been with a volcanic soil right near Mount Etna. And when they talk about what they know about their terroir and all this stuff, it's a story and it's myth, but it's in the glass. And you guys are doing the same thing with me. I haven't been as inspired by sitting at a brewery in a long time. I've more recently wanted to go to beer bars, which is how I got my start. Because what I like about beer bars is that they're curating. So a beer bar can have Tyrus Bulba or Didola or Orval, and my favorite Orval days are not at breweries because they don't carry Orval. There are places like Novare Res in Maine. Mm-hmm. Was there an Orval day here in Denver? Is there a bar that might serve that?
Yeah, it's not as profound as it used to be, right? I think the fact that these beer bars have gone to a lot of draft and they've started to maybe limit themselves on distributors and try to simplify their programs. So, the very good ones offered some celebration around Orval, but they're hard to find now. It shouldn't be that hard to find good beer, but
really, a really classic beer a lot of times is in a corked and caged bottle. And this is really the preferred method for aging them. You lay them on your side like they would do with a wine, and they'll age the beer in that cork bottle. And over time, it develops, because there's live yeast in there, it's still developing. And so, as I described with the Vestlederen that was 25 years old, it picked up all sorts of nuances over the years. And it was a pretty impressive beer.
Is there anything that you guys want to talk about that I haven't brought up? I mean, one thing that is interesting, how do you do your tours to Belgium?
Yeah, we offer them once a year, pretty much on average now. They sell out usually within a week or two of us offering them up.
In January.
Yeah, we offer them up in January and usually go in September, and they're sold out. It's a lot of our customers. We get a lot of repeat travelers as well. That's a passion project for us, less of a profit center and more of a passion project. We want others to be able to experience what both Charlie and I had over there, that experience of sitting in a beer bar and drinking beer and having those conversations and watching the world go by and the food and the drink and the history. And so, we're very proud of these trips. We enjoy the heck out of them. It's kind of a boutique, high quality experience, but people are like, oh, you could easily take 100. Well, we have no interest in taking 100 people size group.
Yeah, you start to lose control after a while if you've got massive numbers of people. These things are absolutely amazing. And what's one of the things that I've noticed, and part of this was through Ryan's mother, who is a very cool lady who has gone with us on several of these trips, The Belgian.
Is she the white lady in the forest?
Well, yeah. Yeah, she's not in the forest. I don't know. She might volunteer to do that sometime just to give people a thrill coming out of the bar. But she's gone over with us several times. But the Belgians really are interested when Americans appreciate their beer. They're very proud of it. It's national pride. You know, beer is Belgium, whereas wine is France, you know, and or Italy. So they're very proud of the heritage. And when they see Americans coming over, who they used to think of us as the only thing we drank was crappy light lagers. They appreciate the people that appreciate them and their beer, which is part of the national heritage.
Yeah, they welcome us into their homes. They welcome us into places that the public certainly doesn't go to. And, you know, we may we'll have breakfast. We might tour a brewery, and then we might all hop on bikes and bike out to the countryside where a brewery is closed on that day. But they're our friends, so they open up, and they cook us a barbecue lunch. And we sit around for 3 hours next to a lake, trying the beer and eating the food, and then we bike back into town, and we may have another tour or a nice dinner that evening, and that's a day.
And back to your name, we haven't talked about that. Charlie, you talked about the first wave of craft beer, a lot of Belgian-inspired places, and I think about the names. You know, you mentioned the Cheeky Monk or the Thirsty Monk place in Denver, I think a Burp Castle, and in New York City, and there was a playfulness and fun to that, which does go with drinking and socializing. And I wonder, first of all, well, I don't have to question it because it's fun, but why do you have to have such a seriousness about beer and other things? But also your name. I'll tell you truthfully, when I first got the email, it was Bruz. I'm like, Bruz, okay, Bruz. And then when I say it, it's Bruce.
Yes.
So tell us how the name came about, but also referencing this tradition of fun in the, so the Belgian beers are the best in the world. I'm saying that. Great tradition. And yet there's a sense of fun.
Well, yeah. And I mean, our name is an interesting thing. At the time we were trying to come up with a name for the brewery, and you wouldn't believe how hard it is to name a brewery anymore, because with 10,000 of them in the U.S., you know, pretty much most of the names are grabbed up. So we thought about, okay, what says Belgium? And if you look at the Belgian, the Brussels airport, it's BRU. And the letters BRU appear in a lot of Belgian words. And so we basically said, well, why don't we put a Z on it? And then it'll rhyme with BREWS. And it's also simple, easy to remember, and so we got it, and the name has been actually pretty much of a hit here in the Denver area, and people do remember us.
So what's it like here on a Friday night? I'm in this wonderful, I mean, I don't have a lot of expectations when I go anywhere, and I'm always open, but I will say this, when I pulled up here, this is a classic beer brewery tasting room.
Yeah, thanks. You know, it's very community focused, like we talked about earlier. So you'll get about half of the crowd here walked here, you know, from this neighborhood. So we get a really good base from this Midtown area that supports us. We get some people that bike in, and then we'll get the people that'll drive 3 hours, you know, two hours, 1 hour across town to come here because we're so focused. So you get that kind of mix. But yeah, we fill the place. It's a large venue. We built it open and flexible, so that we can host community events. We have a grass area next door that we take over. We host an annual Belgian Brew Fest that we do, and we bring in 12 different breweries that all pour Belgian styles. And so we do that here. That's another community event we do. We do an outdoor concert series in the summer. We never charge for the concert series, you know. So we're just always about, you know, community.
When's the Belgian Beer Fest?
Oh, Belgian Brew Fest is, what is it, June?
June,
16, let's see.
That's the second week in June.
All right, yeah, June 15th this year. It's $48. You get usually about a dozen Belgian breweries. We get some of the importers as well. We'll bring stuff that you can't get outside inside Colorado. They'll import some special stuff.
Omagong and Duvel.
Omagong and Duvel have always been showing up to our things since the first year. And we sell it out. Again, one of those things that quality over quantity. People go, well, you should have a VIP session. No, we're all VIPs that day. We're all drinking Belgian beer together. So we don't segment it out. We don't grow it. People are like, oh, you could sell 5,000 tickets to this thing. No, we cap it at 500 and we're okay with that. The fact that Duvel and Ashouf and you know, these guys will show up to a small festival like this in the middle of Denver says a lot, I think, that we're doing something right. We just love it. Again, it's a camaraderie. We get to see people once a year sometimes, and it's at this festival. And, it's only Belgian styles. And it was funny because when we started this brewery, people said, you can't just do Belgian style. You're going to go bankrupt. And here we are with two tasting rooms, a festival that sells out. We can't do enough trips to Belgium if we wanted to, you know? And I think it just goes to show that, again, quality over quantity. Focus your craft, be passionate about it, live that lifestyle. We're I think, some of the luckiest people in the world to be able to live in this world.
So, Triple, if I say to my listeners, I was hooked on beer by drinking Belgian Triples 25 years ago, how the hell do you pull that off? And this is the beer I want to drink. I'm going to go and have a triple and then finish with a quad. And this white lady, what is it called again?
The White Lady, Dame Blanche.
The White Lady, Dame Blanche is a great way to finish. But how do you get people hooked on triple? Because I could drink that all night, and I will.
You give them a taste of it. And that usually ends up with them getting a full pour of it. And the more they drink it, the more they like it. So triple is, you know, really expanded beyond the monasteries over in Belgium. There are a lot of triples made by independent breweries, and some of the best ones over there are actually from some of the independent breweries. So the monks really have to compete hard to do it. But you have to understand the mindset of the monks. The monks are brewing this for the glory of God. They cut corners nowhere. They will use the very highest quality ingredients, the very best hops, the very best malts, and they'll put, you know, their decades of experience with the beer, which they've constantly are improving, you know, into place to produce the very best product they can. A lot of commercial breweries they're not that passionate about it. It's like, let's get it through. Let's make sure that it can age out in a week and we can get it on and packaged and out the door. And that's not the way they do things in Belgium, and it's not the way we do things here.
Yeah, again, that focus on quality and experience, and we're spoiled, man. We get to live in this Belgian world that we created, and the people we meet, like yourself, and the people that come into this place, just blows us away every year. You know, we're so thankful. We watch these other breweries chase trends and try to come up with the next gimmick, and we don't have to play any of those games. We have to look back at history and decide what we enjoyed the most of it from some of these brews and challenge ourselves to make something like that. And it pays off. So, you know, it's funny when they said you couldn't do it. Now, you know, you hit on it earlier, Jimmy. The breweries that are doing the best right now are the ones that are focused, the ones like us, specialized in a style or a brand. And we've always been in that arena, which is great. It's spoiled us, but we're proud of it. We enjoy it. We've created passion around it. Our entire employee base is here. You know, we talked about COVID a little bit earlier, and how, you know, you always heard these stories where people wouldn't want to come back to work because the government's paying them more than they can at work. We had none of those issues. We had employees just begging to get back in the game. They didn't want to sit at home and watch the world go by. And so we worked so hard to get everyone back to work, and they all came back the instant you could give them something. They jumped on it. And we've never had to put job ads out. We have a waiting list of people that want to work here. We've just created what I think is a really special ship that we're proud of, and we're very blessed and humbled by it.
I just want to say I'm so fortunate to have met you guys and got a chance to come here and record with you. One more time, say your names and who you are, and we're going to close out.
Charlie Gottenkenning, co-founder of Brews Beers.
Ryan Evans, co-founder of Brews Beers.
And thanks so much. I'm Jimmy Carboni. I'm the host of Beer Sessions Radio. It's our 15th year. Thanks for supporting us on heritageradionetwork.org. Big thanks to our engineer, Armin Spengen, who's going to clean this up. And we'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Cheers, cheers.
Woo!
Cheers.
Sante.
Beer Sessions Radio is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.